From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made almost 100 years ago in downtown Rochester. An 8-story building rose above the corner of Chestnut and Elm Streets, and it has been a fixture. The building is known as the Cadillac Hotel, and you can get a room for around $60 a night. But the Cadillac is better known as a temporary home for people who are homeless, many of whom are struggling with drugs or mental health challenges. In 2015, Mayor Lovely Warren asked City Council to get on board with an application that would turn the Cadillac into 56 market-rate apartments. The mayor said it would revitalize the area and add to the resurgence downtown and in the East End. Almost 3 years later, the Cadillac Hotel remains full of questions. We got some answers in a piece last week from Open Mic Rochester. Journalist Vanessa Cheeks reported on the current ownership and also the question of what happens to the people who need the hotel. She wrote, quote, "Whether new homes are found for current tenants and the building is transformed or it continues to operate as a sort of safe haven, we need to look out for those that reside in the hotel." End quote. Her piece generated a lot of discussion about the Cadillac, but also broader questions related to homelessness in Rochester. And we're here to talk about all of that this hour. My guests include Vanessa Cheeks, a reporter for Open Mic Rochester. Excellent work, and thanks for taking the time to come in to discuss it.
Thank you.
Also here with us in studio is Patrick Krebix, who is a former resident of the Cadillac Hotel, spent 6 months there last year. Patrick, welcome to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also here is Sister Grace Miller, the founder of the House of Mercy. Sister Grace, welcome back to the program. And here is Lori Jones-Prizel, the executive director of Dimitri House. Lori, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
I want to say hello briefly to our producer, Megan Mack, who is here to remind us that this is day one of our winter membership campaign. Hello, Megan Mack.
Hello, Evan. I'm not sure if I can hear you, so I'm just going to talk. Hi, everyone.
I hear you on a faraway microphone.
Okay. If it sounds like I'm down a hole, listeners, this is a good opportunity to take into consideration. Oh, we're going to stand by.
Favor and just put me back on here because I'm only hearing you far away. So why don't I, on this occasion, I will tell you what Megan was going to tell you, and then next hour, we'll get that all squared away here. This is one of those, by the way, it's one of those weeks where every mic in the building is in use and every seat is in use because we are all a flutter here because we are raising funds and raising, we hope, membership pledges. So here's the deal. We try not to do this very much. Sometimes if you listen to public radio in other markets, people will say it seems like half the time they're pledging. That does not happen here. We interrupt very, very infrequently, just a few minutes for the hour here on Connections, a little bit here and there in the morning and in the afternoon. That's it. And what we're asking you to do is call us and make a membership campaign pledge here. So you can become a member, a sustaining member. You know what you're supporting. You're supporting conversations like these. This hour, it's a conversation that started right here thanks to Vanessa Cheeks' work. And we've got a platform here to open it up to stakeholders across our community and to you as well. And we don't do it in 90 seconds like some newscasts do locally. We don't do it in 4 minutes. We do it in 51 minutes of the hour. That's because you're supporting that, and we need you to call right now, 454-6300. Our volunteers are here today, 585-454-6300, 585-454-6300, or jump online, WXXI.org. Click on the Give button. It's a piece of cake. It takes about 90 seconds, and you're off and running with your day. And we hope that you will join your friends and neighbors who have already done that. Thank you very much for doing that. Let me start this discussion with Vanessa Cheeks, the reporter for Open Mic Rochester, who spent, I think, a couple of months working on the story. And I want to ask you, what put it on your radar to begin with, Vanessa?
Interestingly enough, it was another story. Some live tweeting I was doing for the Liberty Pole lighting for Open Mic. And I had been downtown before. Obviously, I used to spend a lot of time down there when I was younger, and then just walking around, you know, just walking back to my car, I saw all the new developments that were taking place in that particular part, and I just went around the corner and I saw the Cadillac Hotel, and it's always been there, but I noticed that it was one of the only buildings that hadn't changed. So on the outside, part of it was empty. The sign was lit as it usually was. There were people out front. And it just kind of got me thinking, you know, I have remembered hearing that it was supposed to change, that there were apartments going in there a few years ago. And obviously you can see that didn't happen. So it just, you know, kind of piqued my interest to find out why. And then the more I looked into it, the more I found that there were more questions than answers. And it wasn't a very transparent process. You couldn't find a reason why. So I went in search for one.
And we, as well, reached out to DHD Ventures, who are, I guess, far as we can tell, in charge of the project there. They have not responded. We reached out on Friday afternoon. in various forms and haven't heard back from them. What did you hear from them?
Well, to be clear, the previous owners were the ones who were supposed to be in charge of that previous project where it was supposed to turn into apartments.
Yep.
DHD Ventures didn't purchase the property until October of 2017. When I reached out to them by phone, it took a lot of digging, to be honest. They've purchased the building, and most of their properties are purchased under an LLC, which basically means DHD Ventures' name is not on any of the paperwork. You can't find the Cadillac Hotel on their website, even though a lot of other buildings that they own under an LLC are there. So it's kind of one of the only ones that isn't. And so once you find out, okay, it is DHD Ventures that owns this property, luckily enough, which wasn't, you know, the thing of the past before, you couldn't even find the name of an owner. So now you see DHD Ventures, they have a phone number, they have a website. But when I reached out, it was, you know, a strict no comment, and they did try to direct me to some other projects they had going on, which I wasn't necessarily interested in. But the feeling I got was, we're not going to talk about it. I did follow up with some emails as well that went unanswered as well. So.
Okay. And when Vanessa's talking about transparency, it's not been easy to kind of get a handle on exactly the future of this hotel now. And I think one of the things that really matters here is the question that Vanessa raised in the piece and closed with in the piece. No matter what happens, I think it's a discussion that cannot exclude the very people who've been served by that hotel in recent years. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you found about what's going on there now? And I don't want to dwell on the conditions, but I think as you raised in the piece, it is important to at least note them, because there are community stakeholders who want to know, is this a safe place to send people? Is it quality enough? Is it good enough to send people?
I would say it's not. You know, all the reports that you read, the people that we've talked to, I know our photographer, Michelle, she had spent some time there, and she spent $1,000 after being in there for, I think she said, less than an hour to get rid of the bed bugs in her home that had transferred from the hotel to her own house. And so the conditions that people are living in are not okay. I recently actually, before this show, found out finally from the county that the reason why DHS is no longer placing people there is because of the conditions. And so they stopped doing that in 2016, and that was specifically why. Currently, there are no plans listed with City Council to describe what's going to happen to the building moving forward. That's not uncommon. It does sometimes take a while for developers to kind of come up with this stuff, and they don't want to throw out ideas if it's not going to stick. But it does kind of raise more questions than answers, because none of those plans or previous plans have really included, like, okay, and this is what we're going to do about the people that live there now. It's not as easy as just evicting somebody who rents an apartment can go rent another apartment. These people cannot get traditional housing. So if you're purchasing a building, it either has to be on your radar, or it's a real big concern for the community if it wasn't when you bought it. So,
and Vanessa, from what best you can understand in your reporting, how are most people, I'm going to say, either paying, or who is paying, and who's covering the stay for most of the people who are staying at the Cadillac now?
So without DHS doing that right now, it's either people paying out of their own pocket. Some people are long-term residents. We've had, you know, reports that people have been there for over 15 years or more. So these people are getting whatever income they have, whether it's Social Security or something, and turning it around and using that to pay for their stay there. And they're paying upwards to $700 to $800 a month for that. There are also people who, you know, if they have $60 for the night and the weather is a little harsh, then they're going to go and stay there. They also may work with other homeless agencies to be placed there as well. But it varies between who and what their stay is for.
And one of the reasons we wanted to reach out to Lori and Sister Grace is because this is a challenge that extends beyond one building and one place in the city. And here's Jeremy on Twitter writing to us saying, Rochester's Cadillac Hotel represents the clash between rapid center city redevelopment progress and forgotten resident families left behind by a failed public assistance strategy for our most vulnerable neighbors. And so in a moment, I'm going to ask Patrick to describe his stay to the extent that he's willing. And I respect you for being here. And I hope that you're well, Patrick. So I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm pretty.
But before we do that, let me just ask Lori Jones Prizel. You're quoted pretty extensively in Vanessa's piece about, you know, the concerns about the quality of the stay and the services that are available. So right now, from your perspective as the executive director of Dimitri House, How do you view the status of the Cadillac? What's going on there?
Well, unfortunately, as much as the facility itself is a wreck, and there's no nicer way to say that, I think anyone, the first thing they step in the door, the thing that really, comes to mind is the smell of urine. That's the first thing that you step in. And then there's, you know, bed bugs and there's plenty of roaches. And quite honestly, I can tell you that it's been that way for a lot of years. But on top of the fact that it does house, unfortunately, from the weather that we're especially experiencing this winter, where we're hitting that minus degree weather, it does house people that may not always have other alternatives. I know that Sister Grace will also speak to this. The shelters here are now more than filled to capacity here in Rochester right now with folks that have nowhere to go. And with the possibility of this place being closed, we're going to have a whole lot more of a larger homeless, chronic homeless issue here in Rochester.
And why don't you remind our listeners what Dimitri House is?
Dimitri House is we're a very tiny shelter. We've been in existence actually almost 30 years here in Rochester. We house 7 to 9 gentlemen at the most, provide a food cupboard and a drop-in lunch program. So we assist people not only that are experiencing chronic homelessness, but experiencing poverty and sometimes working poverty here in Rochester. So we've, for 30 years, provided some shelter for some gentlemen to come into to a place and have a clean bed and a meal.
Okay. Sister Grace, how do you view the situation at the Cadillac, and how much interaction do you have with either people who have been residents there, people who come to the House of Mercy? Because I know that the House of Mercy has, I don't know if you're full, so to speak, but yeah?
Overcapacity.
Overcapacity, okay.
Right. Well, if the Cadillac is not in good condition, which it isn't, then it needs to be fixed up. And I think that's where the county, the city, and the state have to come together and make sure it's clean, you know, that it's no longer infested. They can do that. There are ways of doing that. They know that. So instead of putting people who really need housing, the homeless in particular, out, fix the place up. What bothers me is that this is probably part of the whole intention of changing downtown, making downtown, turning it over into a high income area. You go downtown now and, you know, they don't want the poor on the streets. And the Cadillac is right near there. So that's part of their plan to clean the streets, not only to clean the streets of the poor people that have been living downtown, have been seen downtown for many years. And you see the bus station. I get upset when I look at the bus station. It's on a side street. You know, you don't see the poor catching the bus on the main street, which was an effort to clean downtown and, you know, preparing it for upper income. And I believe the Cadillac is needed for the homeless. We need it because all of our shelters are over capacity. And that's proven this, with the weather we've had lately. The county needs to open up more shelters, need to provide more beds, and need to make sure that the Cadillac is ready for homeless people. Where are they going to go? You know, they say it's bad, but where are homeless people going to go if they don't have places to go? And that's what we face every day. The county complains to us because we're over capacity. Our question to them is, what are you doing about it? You know, it's not just our responsibility. It's the county's responsibility. It's the city's responsibility. And it's the community's responsibility.
And I don't want to speak for Mayor Warren or City Council, but just going back to some of WXXI News reporting from 2015, when the mayor was urging council to look at this application for market rate apartments. What did you make of that development there? And the mayor saying, you know, this looks like a pretty good option for an area that's starting to boom.
Well, you know, my heart is with the poor. And I think, you know, I don't believe in us putting poor people out for developments for upper class people. I mean, the wealthy have places to go. They have the money for it. The poor have no place to go because they don't have the resources. So when I see how downtown is developing and getting rid of the poor, I get upset.
Vanessa's piece included a section of what some businesses nearby think about the Cadillac. And there's, I would say, various opinions that aren't all the same there. From Fuego Coffee, one perspective, but a very different perspective than the folks who are next door to Cadillac, right, Vanessa?
Yeah, it was interesting because you could see the people who were new to the area, if you could say, kind of not be fazed by it. They understand the dynamics and what's going on, and obviously they do have contact with the people who live at the Cadillac Hotel or just the homeless in the area, but it doesn't really seem to bother or impact them. And some could say that it's because they are so new to the area, whereas you have places that are more established, like Minuteman Press, who I spoke to, who've been in the area since they were in Midtown Mall, and they've come in contact with the people that live there daily, and they make a lot of contact with previous and current owners about that problem. And they are somewhat fed up over it. And it is an interesting dynamic that you can see. And when I spoke to the owners at Fuego, they have not had contact with DHD at all, whereas the Minuteman Press, they call them daily. So it's kind of interesting to see how they handle the situation differently. And it's, you know, it's worth exploring to see if whether it's because they're so new or because, you know, the other company has been there for so long.
Hmm. Well, I want to ask Patrick Rebix, who was there at the Cadillac for about 6 months last year, for some of your thoughts. And first of all, what life was like inside the Cadillac Hotel? What were the conditions like for you when you were there, Patrick?
Conditions were tough. You know, I had known about the Cadillac for years before moving in there. I had stayed there previously before moving in there last year. I was placed there through Trillium, you know, right around that time when DSS stopped helping people, stopped sending people there. It almost seemed like Trillium was trying to help bail them out in a way. Like, there's definitely a problem with management I see at Cadillac, and that's really the only problem with a place like that not working out right is management, you know, and unfortunately it seems that that's where the property management has gone to it. They're taking any money that they could get and to keep it going the way it is, because, you know, the majority of the people that I see staying there aren't people from DSS. There are people that get a monthly check, you know, they get their SSI check or their SSD, and I don't want to say this come out the wrong way, but it's not money they worked for, so they don't really care spending the whole thing on it. Their money could be used to better their housing, let's just say, you know, to better their lifestyle, to better their life, you know, if they were to seek other housing. You know, like, I understand the follies. Like, I just spent an extra 4 months out on the street trying to find a place, you know what I mean, that would suit, you know, my personal needs, you know, and it's hard to find a place out there, you know, and, you know, I was lucky enough that there's the programs here in the city that, you know, that was to work with me and help me get a place, you know, because I spent 6 years, 7 years out on the street, like, you know, and it's, this has been a huge transition, you know, and a lot of people that, like, when they finally get that option to, like, go into some place like the Cadillac, like, for me, I was so relieved to just be off the street, like, and not in the elements, that, like, everything else, all the other crap that was going on around me didn't even matter, didn't bother me for the first couple months. But then it started, like, started creeping into my personal life, and it started affecting me, you know, and that's when, you know, and that's when the place really started, I started seeing the place for really what it had become, you know what I mean, and it was a headache, and it's a headache on the downtown area there.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that, the headache, the conditions?
Just a lot of coming and going of residents, you know what I mean? You know, if you don't have pride in where you're staying, then, you know, you're not going to care about it. No one's going to care about it. You know what I mean? And it's going to go to shit. It's okay.
We've got a dump button. but that's okay. We take the point.
Yeah.
What about, did you have a single room yourself?
I was with a significant other.
Okay. And how were the conditions in your own space?
I was lucky enough, I didn't have bed bugs in my room.
Were there a lot of bed bugs in the building?
Yeah, every floor I heard, you know. Okay. My mother-in-law stayed there at the time, too, and she was getting bit every night, you know. She, I think, changed rooms 3 or 4 different times, you know. But, yeah, that was, you know, they had the exterminators come in every other day, it seemed like.
Okay. You know? And for you, then, did you see anything that was making anything better? Was management responding to any concerns? Did you have regular contact with management, or were they just not sort of a problem? They were.
Yeah, they're in the exterminator guy. I wish I could remember his name, because he was really nice, you know? And he just seemed to be like, you know, I was, you know, like, it seemed to be too much for him. You know what I mean? To keep, like, keep on top of, you know, cockroaches and stuff, and then dealing with the bed bugs. You know what I mean? And constantly people in and out, in and out. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to stay on top of it. Hotel setting, you know, in a clinical setting, it'd be a lot easier. But it's you know, it's not that type of setting.
Did you feel safe there?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I did.
And did you in general? Do you think most people who stay there feel pretty safe there?
No, not at all.
Okay,
I do not.
Why is that?
Just a lot of the in and out, coming and going of the place. You know, I know drugs and prostitution have been, you know, huge in that area. You know, with that place. You know, and for the community not to look at that as an issue, you know, that's a big problem, you know what I mean? Because it continues to be a problem, and it's, I don't think anybody who knows of the Cadillac knows of its problems, and to not talk about it, you know, is doing the place a disservice, doing the city a disservice, you know.
Well,
so
I'm glad
we're here.
To Patrick's point there about, you know, what people are doing about it. We did reach out as well to Monroe County, as Vanessa Cheeks did for her piece for Open Mic Rochester. And listeners, just a reminder, that's why we're here. Open Mic Rochester's piece on this, several months' worth of journalism going into that piece. We're posting it on our various platforms so you can check it out. It's great work. This is the statement from Jesse Sleaser, spokesman for Monroe County. Quote, the New York State Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance implemented new temporary housing inspection requirements in 2016. When the county conducted the first inspection thereafter, the Cadillac Hotel did not meet the new standards. Prior to the change, County Executive DeNolfo had also directed our Department of Human Services to explore alternatives out of concern for the quality of the housing offered at the Cadillac. End quote. So you heard Sister Grace say they think the county, if they wanted to, could you use the phrase fix it up, Grace. Is that oversimplifying? Well,
it may be oversimplifying it, but, you know, if they're going to close the Cadillac, then they better find alternate places for them. And right now they're putting them in hotels that are out in the suburbs, Henrietta and out in Lyle Avenue. And how do homeless people transport? How do they get transportation to go from, you know, Henrietta to the city back where they really live? You know, so my thing is, okay, if you're not going to fix it, then find alternatives, because there's a definite need here for more beds, more shelters for the homeless, and the affordable housing is not really affordable to our poor. They talk about affordable housing, but, you know, $600 in the apartments, but $600 for someone who's getting $800, that's not affordable. You know, so if there's a problem there, I'm saying fix it or find other methods and alternatives to create housing and shelter for the poorest of our city, in our county.
I'm going to grab a couple of phone calls in a moment, but let me ask Lori Jones-Prizel, Executive Director of Dimitri House. Is it overly simplifying things to ask you this question, or do you think it's valid to ask, whose problem is the Cadillac? Is it the people who manage it? Is it the county? Is it the city? You know, who has the most say in how that would change, the conditions would change?
I think there's a fair mix in everybody that you've mentioned. As I was listening to everybody talking, I think the thing that comes to mind is, for as many years as this facility has been in place, it's almost a way. When people have asked me in the past about individuals that have stayed at the Cadillac, first of all, it's a gambit of all kinds of different people. I myself stayed there in my youth at 18 when I was experiencing homelessness. I've known other people that have come from all walks of life. What I think probably has upset me the most is the fact that clearly even with the county, who was using that facility for many years, it remains a fact that, yes, there are a number of people in there that have drug addiction. There's people in there with all kinds of mental health issues. There's people in there with a variety of different domestic violence, all kinds of things that are happening. So they're not always easy to place elsewhere. I get that. And that's not where I come from. Where I come from is, why is it that those individuals, because of the things that they have going wrong with them, deserve less than the rest of the community? You know, because someone has a mental health issue, they deserve to live in a place that smells like urine and has bugs in it. Because they're even in the midst of a drug addiction, instead of trying to support them and try to help them with that addiction and try to get them into a better placement, let's keep them in a place almost a nest where that will continue to happen because there's tons of other people literally doing that same thing. So I think the thing that's always frustrated me the most is the fact that it treats human beings less than in that particular setting. I kind of agree with Sister Grace in one way. You want to fix the hotel, then let's make it subsidized housing here in Rochester. You know, stop trying to drive out the poor from Rochester areas. I love some of the things that they've done. I've been a resident of Rochester my whole life, so I've seen from Midtown Plaza to the days when you used to bring your kids down to ride the Christmas trolley to, you know, when I was younger and had no vehicle, I took a bus down there, I grocery shopped down there. Many of the homeless used to be able to get warm and have coffee and stuff Midtown, and all of that's been, and it's great. In some ways, it's phenomenal what we're trying to do with Rochester right now, but we are looking to segregate more. We are trying to drive the poor out of the Rochester area and make this the cuspid of a very high-end city, when it really should just be a mix of people, period. And that's kind of my philosophy.
Lori, do you think the mayor would agree with that? Do you think city council would agree with that assessment?
No. You know, we talk about it frequently, not even just the mayor, but in any kind that we're dealing with in terms of what are we going to do with the chronically homeless individuals in there. It's more like, how do you make them go away? That's really the ultimate goal. And I think Sister Grace would agree with me on this one. It's where can we hide them? Where can we place them? Where can we put them? And now that we're upgrading downtown and trying to make it into this, you know, new city, basically, we don't want homeless people right in the heart of downtown. We want to push them still out further. And that's where the struggle comes.
All right. Well, I want to grab a phone call from someone who works in this realm. It's the co-founder of Person-Centered Housing Options. Nick Coulter is on the line with us. Go ahead, Nick. Welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you. How are you?
Good.
Good. So I just wanted to say how happy I am that Pat has found a place to live and that he's doing well. And I also wanted to echo Lori and Sister Grace's opinions. I think that it's very hard to provide proper housing, and these two know it better than I do, for folks that are experiencing these challenges. I think one of the things that I want to draw attention to is that a lot of the folks that are living at this hotel aren't considered homeless because of the definition of homeless. And so for us as providers and as sisters in helping people to access housing, these folks are paying their way to stay there, which means that technically they're not going to qualify for some housing, which is a big problem that I have. I really worry about folks that are in those precarious situations, staying at hotels and have no other means, and they're using all of their money and income to just stay there one night at a time, and technically can't access our housing for the homeless. So it's just that's something we need to consider. As also a provider to the Cadillac, we have an office downtown at the Cadillac, and provide, you know, assistance to some of the folks that are there when they are considered homeless. And you know, we have seen a decrease in folks accessing us, but we also, you know, are interested to see what's going to happen to us for our office there, and aren't really sure yet.
Well, Nick, thank you for taking the time to call, and before I let you go, one more quick follow-up there. You talk about, you know, Patrick finding, and I'll follow up in a second and ask Pat how he's doing now, because we were talking about what happened in the last year with him there. Is the Cadillac Hotel part of, do you see it getting back to part of solutions for you, or is it making your work, is it making the work of other providers more difficult?
I think both, but if I have anything to say about it, I'm going to make it into a solution. If it means that we have to make the Cadillac a place where folks are considered homeless in order for these folks to access housing, that could be one solution. Or like Lori said, which is right up my alley and thinking about that as well, is renovating the Cadillac or providing affordable housing The development company that's working there has the ability to partner with a nonprofit and do affordable housing and work on those kinds of things. And that could be a solution or an alternative to the Cadillac, is to provide affordable housing for the homeless through new state grants and the governor's initiatives.
Nick, thanks for taking the time to call. I know we're going to talk to you soon.
Okay, and just make sure that Lori and Sister Grace know that we're thinking of them and we're with them on this.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Thank Nick is the co-founder of Person-Centered Housing Options in Rochester and apparently knows Patrick. I feel like Nick knows everybody in this town. It's just one of those kind of guys. How are you doing now? What's the latest with you, Patrick?
Doing well. I just got into his apartment a couple weeks ago. Yeah, it's really new right now, so I'm just kind of taking it by ear. But yeah, like I said.
And the hope is that that's home for a long time?
Yes. Yep.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Do you have friends who are still at the Cadillac?
No, I don't believe so.
So there's nobody that you know. Do you get to know people in your time there? Again, you're there for about 6 months.
Oh, yeah, I've got it. In my time back here in the city, I've gotten to know a lot of people, you know, especially being in, you know, in the homeless scene, I guess, in downtown. Yeah, a lot of the same people were there when I first got here, you know what I mean? And a lot of the same people that I was touching on before that, you know, like Nick said, they don't really qualify as homeless. So, you know what I mean? They're kind of stuck in that position where they don't necessarily qualify for certain programs to get them in, you know, but. I'm lucky enough to have the case managers that, like, to point me in the right direction, literally, you know, and I think a lot of those people that, like, do get that funding or whatever, you know, have case managers that could be pointing them in the right direction maybe, you know.
I'm just wondering, yeah. You know, if you see...
I consider myself extremely lucky to have the people that that I've had working for me because they're fantastic. Like, the people that are involved in these programs and finding houses for these people are incredible. Like, they really are. They're amazing. Like, you know, I owe my life to them. I really do. Yeah.
I understand, you know, how you feel, and we have said many times off air, there's different approaches to addressing homelessness in Rochester, but Sister Grace, Lori, the people like Nick Coulter, there's a number of people who you can just see are sincere in their desire.
The personal approach is the best.
Personal approach is the best for you. Okay, well, I'm glad you're doing well. Patrick Krebicz is a former resident of the Cadillac Hotel. He's one of our guests. I just mentioned Sister Grace Miller, founder of the House of Mercy, and Lori Jones Prizel, executive director of Dimitri House. We're all here because of the reporting of Vanessa Cheeks, a reporter for Open Mic Rochester, whose work on the Cadillac Hotel brought us up to date on what's going on at a place that a lot of people are sad to see the conditions, and there's still hope that maybe it could be that could change. But there's a lot of questions about the conditions and what it means for people who live there, either temporarily, sometimes longer term. We're going to get our only break of the hour. We'll come back to your phone calls and questions. You can call the program 844-295-TALK. That's toll free, 844-295-8255. That's next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the future of transit in New York State outside of New York City. Now, if you're in Manhattan, you've got all kinds of options. In the subway, the MTA gets a lot of the love, a lot of the money. But what about Rochester and Buffalo and Syracuse? What's our future of transit? How are we truly going to become multimodal into the future? What should the priorities be? We will discuss it with the head of RTS next hour. Welcome back to Connections. Let me grab a phone call. Tom in Greece has a question about the Cadillac Hotel. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, well, how old is the Hotel Cadillac, and when did it become a place for low-income homeless people?
Vanessa Cheeks?
So there's varying reports on when the Cadillac was opened or built. Some say 1920. Others say 1923, so it is roughly 100 years old. I would say put it around 98 or 99, and it deteriorated over time. So one way somebody put it was that eventually the Cadillac became one of the only hotels who wouldn't turn people away. So when places like homeless organizations or, you know, the county are looking to place these people, the Cadillac was there to say yes. The reasons why they said yes, kind of vary. I guess it depends on the ownership, whether it was because they wanted to help or because they wanted the money. Eventually, it became a place where less was being put into the quality of the space and more was being collected by way of the tenants. And that's kind of how you get this place that it is now.
Does that help you, Tom?
Yeah, yes, thank you.
All right, thanks for the phone call there. We're discussing not just the Cadillac Hotel, but the broader question of how we help people in need. And Barbara writes to the program and wants to know, well, what about expanding, if the conditions are as they are at the Cadillac, what about expanding the other existing shelters? Well, Sister Grace, the House of Mercy, just expand it. And look, by the way, Barbara's emailing in very good faith, you know, just mm-hmm. wondering about other solutions. But how viable is that kind of an idea?
Well, you know, we've expanded. We have 82 beds, but that's not enough for the homeless that are in the city. So our numbers are over 82. And then we get criticized by the county for having over 82. You know, we're looking for help. We're not looking for criticism. And we get the criticism from the county. It's very difficult for us because they're putting laws and rules and regulations. And yet when they're putting out those laws, rules, and regulations, people are out in the cold. So we asked St. Joe's to help us with the overflow. And we've been turning to other shelters to help us with the overflow. But that's not enough. You know, it's true there are not enough beds for the homeless in the city and there are not enough shelters. And the county has to face that and has to make preparation for that. Instead of saying they can place everyone, they cannot place everyone. But that's what they're always saying. But they're not, because they're saying right now there are 75 more homeless people out on the street that need to be placed, but I believe the number is much larger than that. There are many more. We have many at the House of Mercy. You have yours. All the other shelters are filled to capacity or overflowing. But with all of us in existence, there still are homeless people out in the streets that need to be placed. And if the Cadillac is a problem, then fix the problem. And there is money to do this. The county says they don't have money, but they do find money for things they want to do. The city can put money into it. So what we're saying is this is a community effort. The city and the county have to come forth and solve the problem and not push poor people out. What I see happening is they're moving the poor and the homeless out of the city. Years ago, maybe in the 70s and 80s, I heard there was a plan in the future that the low-income projects would, in time, become high-ended, upper-ended structures, which means that they would be turned over from low-income to high-income developments. And I see that happening now. It happened over on by the river, Mount Hope. That was low-income at one time. Now it's high-income. Well, where do the poor people go? Who knows where they went? Was there room for them elsewhere? So they're putting many people that already have places, they're putting them out, and now we're hearing about tenants that are in Southview Towers and other tenements that they're told they have to pay the full amount. They're going to get rid of Section 8, and they have to pay the full amount of the rent. They can't do that. So what's going to happen? Now, I see the beginnings of what was predicted years ago occurring now, which is an attempt, and I also heard the word exurbia way back, that they were going to move the poor out of the city, not into suburbs, but into exurbia. Mm-hmm. And I see that happening today. And this was 20, 30 years ago.
Hmm. Let me ask Lori Jones-Prizel from the Dimitri House. What do you make of Barbara's email about expanding existing facilities?
I'd like to say that there's a number of new initiatives and programs that are kind of coming out. For those that are familiar, there is a program called Housing First right now, which exists to try to help folks find placement regardless of treatment and of various other hurdles that they used to have to take on. And those programs are wonderful. However, similarly to what Nick had mentioned, what we continually deal with, and in no way am I trying to bash the county, there is this kind of ongoing circle of issues that we continue to struggle with. Like Nick mentioned, we talk about the fact that if somebody's at the Cadillac, then technically they're not homeless. So now they're not eligible for things like Shelter Plus and Section 8 and other things, because at that point they're not really homeless. And we this is what I think Sister Grace and I and the other shelters here, this is the kind of rhetoric that we're dealing with on a consistent basis, is trying to help folks like Patrick and stuff and trying to get them forward. In terms of expanding shelters, yes. I mean, we have a temporary shelter set up on our property right now, REACH, who is another grassroots agency that set up some stuff recently. There's other just people, citizens of Rochester who have set up homes in different areas, rental properties to shelter individuals. And yet we're still seeing large numbers of people that are homeless. At the end of January, we did our point in time count here in Rochester. And although the actual data is not out, there was well close to 1,000 individuals that are deemed homeless here in Rochester. And there's still 75 individuals, give or take. Don't quote me, Nick, if you're listening. He's got all the data. But I think there was about 75 individuals that if we had filled up every single shelter in Rochester, they still would not have a place to go. And like Patrick was mentioning in one of our breaks, that we have people that are sleeping in porta potties here in Rochester to stay out of the elements of the cold. So increasing the shelters is not necessarily a bad idea. It's a temporary idea. I'd like to see more work and more cooperation with the state and the county and the city to do programming that can help individuals obtain their own homes like Patrick right now and seek. Nobody wants to live in a shelter. Community is great. You know, you get to familiar with people, but nobody wants to live in a shelter. And I fear sometimes, and no offense to the House of Mercy, because they do a thing that we have never been able to do with the numbers, but I'm not looking to institutionalize and start to house and segregate chronically homeless individuals into facilities either. I want to keep them within their city, within our neighborhoods, and within our dynamics.
I want to read an email that I think will get some people's attention. And before I do that, I was just going over some of the numbers that Professor Harry Murray from Nazareth College, he's a professor of sociology at NAS, and he studied over the course of about 27 years, essentially the story of homeless individuals who had died in Rochester, who had long-term, I think, House of Mercy contact. And so what Harry Murray found was that being homeless in Rochester means that you live a third of a lifetime shorter. I mean, 26 years shorter. 52.5 was the average age of death compared to an average life expectancy in the same zip code for people who are not homeless of essentially 78 years. So that is a staggering statistic. And women impacted even more so than men. Now, this isn't the biggest sample size possible, and that was a very, very strange finding, but very, very concerning. And the bottom line is that I think Professor Murray's data found that being homeless means that for various reasons, you don't live as long. And the question becomes, what are the value that we put on life? What does that mean going forward? That was part of what Vanessa Cheeks raised in her piece on Open Mic Rochester, and part of what you hear from Sister Grace on this program all the time. Mm-hmm. So I just thought Professor Murray's numbers should be kept in context here, because if we continue with this problem, people are literally living a third of a lifetime shorter. And so here is an email from a listener named Leah, and she says, why is downtown the right place for the homeless? Sister Grace, Lori?
I would tell you that I think a lot of it is transportation and being, you know, accessible to things. For years, when you've placed people technically out of the city dwelling, they can't get from point A to point B. They, you know, there's not a corner store in the suburbs where you might be the only place to get your meal. It becomes an issue, and not that I would tell you that most of the chronically homeless individuals that I've met are some creative human beings. I've seen some things that I thought I'd never see in the name of being able to accomplish a goal. However, the other part that I continue to beef on is that they're human beings and they deserve to be that component of our culture. They deserve to be a part of it. And, you know, even in terms of frequently when I deal with some stigma regarding homelessness, people want to talk about, well, why don't they just go out and get a job? Why don't they just get a job? It's so simple. It's so much larger than that. And if anyone would like to know the stigma and the struggles of trying to get homelessness, believe me, call me. I'll let you know. But that even by itself, you can't get employment if you can't get to a place. And without the busing systems, you can't. I mean, hence the reason that many low-income individuals tend to live inner city.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Leah's email, I don't know the tone or intention of the email. It's difficult. I think some would read that email and find it almost offensive, but I think Lori took it from the standpoint that said, hey, logistically, let's talk about why downtown is right for the homeless. Sister Grace, how do you answer Lizzie?
Well, you know, when we were on Hudson Avenue, and Hudson Avenue is in the city and really the pocket of poverty in Rochester, we had many homeless people with us to overflowing too, but many homeless didn't want to walk the distance, especially in the cold and at night, from downtown to Hudson Avenue where we were located. And it bothered me, but now that we're downtown, the homeless are coming. They're walking. It's within walking distance. They come and eat. They come and sleep. And they come and socialize. We have community there. It's like family. But, you know, to downtown, as you said, you know, it's within, every place is within walking distance. You know, and our homeless don't have transportation. You know, so they're downtown, and they're coming, and this is really where they live. I mean, they can get food, they can generally find a place to stay, but House of Mercy and our places are so close that they can just walk. If they're homeless, they can just walk to us.
I would just point out that, you know, we just had a Super Bowl yesterday. In many cities over the years, there have been stories of them busing homeless people away from downtown areas just so people don't have to see it or to hide it in the same way that Lori and Sister Grace had. I don't know about Minnesota yesterday or Minneapolis. I'm not talking about yesterday. I'm talking about over the years. And the notion of just hiding a problem or hiding an issue feels easy when we don't want to confront it. No good way to confront it without understanding that it is real, that it is there. And the notion of just hiding something I don't think it should strike any of us as a good idea. But Leah, I also don't know the spirit of how the email was intended, so I don't want to assume, and I will thank you for writing. I want to grab Michelle Ashley, who's on the line from Open Mic Rochester, who work with Vanessa Cheeks on the report there. And it's always nice to hear from you, Michelle. Thanks for calling. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Hi, everybody. Everybody there, they're my people. I just wanted to call in and say that for Vanessa and I, we have to play the devil's advocate when we do what we do. And it was different for me because I work in the homeless community. They're my people. I know almost everyone out there. I know their stories. I've taken their photos. I've sat and talked to these people. But what was alarming to me was when we went into that building, not only seeing how dirty it is, but we went to a building next door. I don't know if Vanessa remembers what the name of the building is, but the guy was great. He gave us a tour. We went up to the top of the building. The city skyline was so beautiful. And the possibilities of this rooftop terrace that was up there, I was like, I can't believe how gorgeous this is. And this is just sitting here. And the owner was like, stop for a second, look down and look around. And we're looking, there's needles everywhere, crack pipes, condoms, adult diapers, like you name it, and they're all being thrown out the window from the Hotel Cadillac. I'm on the human side of all of this. I see the human part of all the homelessness. But at that moment, I was like, who wants to be their neighbor? Who wants to be right next door to this? It's really difficult. I thought I was going to go in with one opinion and I left with another. I don't know how I would feel about living right next door to that. I don't know how I would be able to rent an apartment if I owned an apartment building there. It was really difficult to see, especially because of the way I feel. I had a brother who died from being homeless. I'm on their side 100%, but they also have to be somebody's neighbor. And who wants them? Who wants us? It's, you know, I try to take a neutral side to it, but when I left, I felt a little bit different than I did when I was going in.
And Michelle, since we're down to our last minute, I just want to thank you for taking the time to call and tell you excellent work in the piece that you did with Vanessa. And
thank you.
Again, we'll link to it. As always, it's nice to hear from you, Michelle. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michelle Ashley with Open Mic Rochester. You can see the photography that she did. And let me clarify Barbara's email from earlier, because sometimes I'm reading email on the fly and I'm sort of editing. Barbara is adding, she wanted me to make sure, she said, when we talk about expanding other shelters, she thinks the developers should pay the cost for either expanding shelters or building a standalone new housing facility for the Cadillac population in the downtown area. Perhaps developers could also put funds into a foundation that could help subsidize costs of running out the new units that they build. So I think Barbara is saying, look, if you've got developers who are not doing the job, especially or management of the Cadillac, that they should be in charge, and it should start with the developer. And Barbara, I apologize for maybe missing some of that context earlier, but I think we see some nods around the table. It's a nice idea in theory. In practice, harder to get there. And the question going forward is, who's going to get in the room and decide what happens at the Cadillac to change that? Patrick Krebix is a former resident telling his story. 6 months at the Cadillac last year, doing well now, and I hope the next time we talk, you're continuing to do well. I'll buy you a cup of coffee. I'll see you soon. Thank you very much for being here. Good luck to you. Our thanks, as always, to Sister Grace Miller, founder of the House of Mercy. Thank you, Sister Grace. Always good to have you. And Lori Jones-Prizel, executive director of Demetri House. Thank you, Lori, for being here. And the great work from Vanessa Cheeks, reporter of Open Mic Rochester. You can find her report online. We will link to it. Continued great success at Open Mic. And thanks for being here again,
Thank
Vanessa.
You.
All right, short break. More connections coming.